One drill keep us together. It's not just about cooking. With the food landscape changing rapidly, companies are increasingly in need of expertise in food policy, community involvement, global issues, food systems, and much more.
And that's why you can now study food history, cultures, and cuisines in the CIA's Bachelor of Professional Studies in the Applied Food Studies program.
It's a lot of stuff, and really, and they all mean something, and we're going to find out what exactly they mean. To tell us more, we welcome Beth Forrest, an associate professor of liberal arts here, where she teaches the Introduction to Gastronomy course, as well as History and Cultures of Europe, Food History, and Global Cuisines and Cultures.
And gastronomy, that means, Joe, eating in space?
Yeah.
All right.
That was going to be said at some point, so get it out early.
That's true. Yeah, that's
like
very
Tang.
True.
Also, food in space. We study Tang.
All right. Also, here is Deidre Murphy, who teaches History and Cultures of Asia, a course for juniors and seniors pursuing bachelor's degrees in culinary management or baking and pastry management. Dr. Murphy also teaches electives in the ecology of food and food and culture.
We welcome Beth Forrest and Deirdre Murphy to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. It's nice to have you back on the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
All right. So usually when the two of you are on, you're on together. So how do the two of you work together?
We collaborate a lot, and it's a real joy. One of the things I think more and more academics are doing, especially in the humanities, which wasn't traditionally as common, is collaborating. And that's both across discipline or across time or across geography. Mm-hmm. And it ends up enriching the entire process and I think the end result as well.
Mm-hmm. So do you like each other?
We do like each other, yeah. And part of the reason we like each other is that I can use Professor Forrest as a storage shed for my brain, and she gets to do the same thing for me.
Oh, yeah.
So we end up collaborating in our writing. We publish together. It's great to have a supportive colleague when you're working out new ideas for your courses, and frankly, it expands the reach of what you can do interdisciplinarily, because being interdisciplinary in our approach to a food is an absolute necessity. So it really helps to have supportive colleagues.
So she's sort of like the cloud for you. You said she's your brain.
Yeah.
Are you calling me Airy?
No.
All right. Okay. Just
atmospheric,
checking.
Atmospheric, okay. Actually, no. To
now
spread
we're,
and
now we're
weight.
Even.
Wow, that turned quick. Okay, so applied foods means what?
Well, I think...
I just love that you just shrugged your shoulders. I think that's great. Like, I don't know.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Well, I think the funny thing is in a sense, we here at the Culinary Institute of America have always done applied food studies.
Okay.
When students are in the kitchens with chefs, there is always a theoretical, there's always a historical, there's always a cultural concern or conversations about sustainability. So what we're really doing is enhancing that, and we're flip-flopping the emphasis. So we're starting with the theoretical a lot more and then thinking about those ideas through the experiential.
Sounds good, yeah.
And I think what's really interesting about what we're doing is that, you know, this idea that chefs should actually have a sustained academic background, it sounds startling now, perhaps it sounds a bit unusual and new, but if we can put it in a broader historical context, this idea that I see floating around popularly is that why should chefs have an academic background? You know, people said the same thing 100 years ago about medical doctors. What do
exactly.
they need to go
they
to
were,
college
they
for?
Were they were barbers.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea becomes for us now, I think, a little bit strange if you take a long view that the people who provide food for us are somehow expected to not have an academic background. Seriously?
So do
they're feeding us.
So if you went to a faculty party with people from other places, other mm-hmm. academics, mm-hmm. would you find, you know, your backs going up at all when they give you a little bit of a hard time?
It really depends. Mm-hmm. When I started and I was applying for my doctorate at Boston University, my advisor said, "Don't mention that you want to study food." Right? And now they have a concentration in food history.
Mm-hmm.
And this year is the 30th anniversary of the Association of the Study of Food and Society, which is an academic organization of those of us who do study food.
Is there a journal?
There is, Food, Culture, and Society. Yeah, but a lot of scholars who have studied food have been really hesitant to talk about it because it was seen as a area for dilettantes only, right? But on the other hand, if you are, I'm a food historian, and if I am going to understand what medieval cookbooks were about, how can I not go and cook that food, right, and try and interpret it? There's no way I could even have a possibility of what it feels like, of what the implications are with regard to labor, with regard to resources, even the idea of embodiment, of standing over an open hearth.
But right? but if you're studying medieval sort of history and foods, would there be a subsection on how to poison a sitting king? Well, how to introduce
perhaps,
poison?
But you have to find the unicorn horn. That's the problem.
Is that the problem?
Yes.
They just don't have those enough anymore, do they? Yes.
And back to your original question, though, this idea of being sidelined in traditional academic circles.
You're allowed to go back to the original question.
Fantastic, because it needed to be addressed by both of us, I think. Here's the interesting thing. Instead of being sidelined now, I think that some of the things that we do here are tending to be more cutting edge. So, for instance, pedagogically, when we're trying to make connections between practical knowledge and more abstract or traditional classroom knowledge, we're actually really quite good at that. So, for instance, this idea of maybe, you know, the idea of tapping a maple tree and learning how to make maple syrup, which we were talking about over the break. Well, when you do that, what you actually end up studying is this whole constellation
science,
of science, physics, history, culture, politics. Identity formation.
Where's the, only because you've now piqued my interest, where's the politics in this?
How is it regulated?
How's it regulated? Who's allowed to use a tree?
Why is maple sugar good, white sugar, corn syrup bad?
Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Well, if you look culturally.
No, but I'm just wondering because, you know, there are those who say sugar, 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 sugar is sugar. Is that true, or some sugars better than other sugars?
Yeah, there's some research that's being done that's trying to talk about the health benefits of maple syrup over cane sugar, for instance, or definitely over high fructose corn syrup. And as far as we've gotten, is high fructose corn syrup is incredibly addictive and dangerous for us, and it's kind of wrecked the appetites of a couple generations now, right? But on the other hand, because I am an historian, if you look back further in time, some of the earliest debates over using maple syrup in the United States went directly to the debates over abolitionism and anti-slavery campaigns.
How's that?
How is that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so for instance, the free produce movement of the Quaker abolitionists in the pre-Civil War era advocated the use of maple syrup because it was produced locally in this sense, meaning nationally within the United States. It was produced by a small producer class of farmers. It was free labor.
Sure.
It was anti-industrialization or in the worst parts of it. And most importantly, it was anti-cane sugar. Cane sugar in the Americas is produced in the Caribbean. It is some of the worst slave labor we've ever seen in the history of the Americas. The average lifespan of a cane worker once arriving on a sugar cane plantation was 5 years until they worked to death.
Well,
that's not maple syrup.
No.
So,
You teach the ecology of food, food and culture. You teach, as I mentioned, history and culture of Asia. So what got you interested in those particular subjects?
Do you mean bringing food together?
Yeah.
With history? You can't. Well, that's been a long road, hasn't it? But what I've learned over time is that you can't really speak meaningfully about the practical material conditions of people's everyday lives without talking about food that's available to them or what they do with food. So I think the historical example I just gave is a perfect example of that.
Right.
I think my colleague, Professor Forrest, is absolutely right in saying that for too long, food has been overlooked in academia. It's been seen as too physical, too base. And now the way we look at it is that it's profoundly essential. Anytime you want to talk about anything, we find you're talking about food.
I certainly am.
Yeah, your plate's clean over there.
Yeah, done. When you look at the program here and this program, what kind of student is there? A type of student that you have seen, or is there a trend there?
I think it tends to be a student who is simply curious and wants to learn more. That they understand that there is more to food than preparing it in the kitchen, and that it's the arm's reach throughout culture.
So what do they go on to? In other words, everybody who's here is going to say, you know, at least their mother will say, why am I paying all this money? What are you doing?
Sure. There? Well, it's interesting. We just got an email that I think it was Thomas Keller, perhaps. But they are looking for graduates that have very strong backgrounds in the humanities and social sciences, because now even if you come in contact with customers within the food industry, customers are so savvy, and you need to be able to have a smart conversation about how sustainable is this?
Sure.
What is the cultural meaning? What is the understanding of it? And
where was it caught?
Exactly.
And I think for any, it doesn't matter where you're changing, which college, which university, which program, doesn't matter. Right now, we're all under tremendous stress or focus, right, to be able to talk about what you can actually do with one of our degrees.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
How this is going to pay off.
Right. Or the humanities in general.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And the way that I...
right?
And the way that I think about that is just some of the things I've noticed with our students, and even over the last couple of weeks, we've had some amazing things happen. Certainly, we have had our graduates, people who have been in our classes who have won Iron Chef competitions. We've had a student just recently who was nominated for a James Beard Award.
So how did you help them win the Iron Chef?
No. But wait a sec, one sec. That, okay. I think that's the kind of thing you would typically expect for success from graduates of the CIA.
Yeah.
But here are other successes that I think matter. We also have students who have gone on to work in public school lunch programs. I want our graduates to be in revamping and revolutionizing public school lunch programs. We have one of my students just recently was accepted into the U.S. Peace Corps to serve in South America. I'm a returned Peace Corps volunteer. This is one of my proudest moments in teaching, that one of our former students is going to work on childhood nutrition programs in South America.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we have other students who are leading federally funded projects to connect school-age students to citywide nutrition programs. Why can't they go into these areas? Why shouldn't they?
Well, I'm fascinated by what you just said about the Iron Chef. Let me go back to that for a moment. So that's your programs are basically scholarly as well as applied, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Somebody who wins the Iron Chef is they can cook.
Mm-hmm. But she was doing it for an interesting reason.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but she was female from Pakistan,
right?
Yes. And the thought that a female was going into the culinary industry and getting respect,
right,
was a huge deal in
sure.
her, not just her family, but in her culture. So what is the part that we're playing in shaping or shifting ideas and attitudes and values with regard to not just food, but society in general?
Oh, we have to go?
We do.
I'm sorry.
But
already.
We have... You're already waving goodbye. We have been talking about the CIA's Bachelor of Professional Studies in the Applied Food Studies program, and our many thanks to Beth Forrest and Deirdre Murphy for bringing us up to date and for joining us this morning. A delight to have you both here, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to the Roundtables live broadcast from the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park on WAMC.